Edge Radio On Demand is made possible by Profile Coffee, located at 15 Portwalk Place in downtown Portsmouth, and online at ProfileCoffeeBar.com. Rediscover coffee at Profile Coffee.
Welcome to 10 Questions for the 10 to Watch, featuring the winners of the Seacoast Young Professionals Contest presented by Catapult Seacoast and Seacoast Media Group. Today, we are joined by 10 to Watch winner Matt Lewis of Portsmouth. He is 37 years old, the chef and owner of the Moxie and Franklin Oyster House restaurants in Portsmouth. His long list of awards includes being a James Beard Foundation Best Chef Northeast semifinalist for the past 3 years. He does a lot of charitable work, hosting events for Share Our Strength, the Coastal Chefs Conservancy, Slow Food, and many more. So we'll start with this question, Matt. When did you first know food was your life's work passion?
I do just want to say that I was not prepped on these questions, so this is like a game show. So this is going to be fun.
Okay, good.
My father was a manager of a hotel on Hampton Beach, and at a very young age, just started going to work with him, like most kids do. And I found his office kind of boring, so I just ended up migrating down to the kitchen, and it kind of just naturally went from there and became something that I got really passionate about.
And I think I might know the answer to the next question already based on what you just said, but who's the single most important thing you did as a young person that led you into your profession?
It was probably the chef at that hotel. His name was Hock An Ning. He was a Malaysian American, and I was getting very into food and cooking, and he brought me to the Culinary Institute of America to see it. And when he brought me there to see it, and when I saw it, I really felt like this is where I want to go. This is what I want to do. At that point, there really wasn't any other options that I was considering.
And how old were you at that time?
He brought me there when I was 16.
Okay, and then so what was the path from there? Because you were obviously still in school.
Yeah, I was in school. I was in high school, so I was working at that hotel as well as another restaurant on Hampton Beach, the Whale's Tail restaurant. I was working at both of those in the summers, on the weekends, throughout my high school years, even started before that. Continued working through my high school years and then graduated high school and started the Culinary Institute of America.
You've had a lot of creative cooking in your restaurants. We've heard about sheep dung being used to smoke meat.
Where did you dig that one up?
We know some people. Rachel Forrest, for example.
Oh, boy.
Activated charcoal being used in ice cream. Also, we heard from Rachel about pasta being made with pig's blood. And then the fish skeletons, they're served at one of your restaurants after the fish is taken from the whole fish and the other. Can you tell us a little bit about some of these creative things you do and where these ideas come from?
Sure. First and foremost, at both the restaurants, our main goals are to provide a meal that's nourishing, that is tasty, and that people feel they spent their money well, that they didn't overpay or underpay for that matter. So before anything, we have to accomplish those goals. And once we accomplish those, if we do, then we start to explore a little bit. Where can we go from here? What can we do? We never lose those elements, like core items on the menu. But for instance, you cook a lot of fish, so you create fish bones and fish skeletons, and usually use them for stock. And one of the guys, it wasn't even my idea, one of the guys had the idea of brining and breading and frying that skeleton so that you can pick all the meat off, because there's a lot of meat left on the skeleton after you take the fillets off. I was honestly a little hesitant on that one. Said, all right, let's try it. We tried it. We liked it, but we like to eat everything back in the kitchen. Said, all right, let's put it on the menu very carefully. And it actually was responded to very well, to the point now where we're not generating enough of the fish skeletons that are a byproduct. So it's a good problem to have to keep up with the amount of people that are ordering it. So that's a great thing. So I guess to get to the question, where does that creativity come from? It comes from first making sure not losing track of the core identity of the restaurant and what our goal is to provide to the guests. And then from there, it comes from a lot of organization and structure, because sometimes people think of creativity as just you can sit around and talk about things and come up with these ideas. But really, you need a lot of organization throughout the day. Because there is businesses to be run. It's a 7-day-a-week business. So it has to be organized. And then from there, it's not just me. It's the whole team that will sit and we will talk about ideas. We'll talk about things we want to try or things we may have seen and then adapting them and testing things out and trying them. So I'm very fortunate that I have a very good team of people working with me that then once we have the windows for that type of collaboration, then it just goes wild. And some of those things that you mentioned make it to the menu.
Okay, I have to ask, why sheep dung and how did it taste?
So that was for a very, very specific dinner. A friend of ours, Marcus, who used to work in our community, he moved to Iceland. He's actually, he's Icelandic by heritage, and he moved to Iceland. And he got very, very deep in traditional Icelandic cooking. He was coming back to visit, and he's a cook, mind you. And so he was coming back, so we had the idea of why don't we see if Marcus wants to do a dinner of authentic Icelandic food to show that off, because this is a very special opportunity to have a friend of ours now in Iceland, cooking in Iceland, coming to our community. So Marcus was all about doing the dinner, and a very traditional ingredient, if you will, in true Icelandic cooking is sheep dung. Now, you don't eat it. What you do is you use it for smoking purposes, smoking fish. And so that's exactly what he did, is that you use this sheep dung for smoking the same way you would use wood chips or wood or other things. And it's a very gentle process. It has to be handled very carefully. I didn't. Marcus went and foraged the sheep dung, if you will, from Riversley Farm. We called Liz and Jeff, who own Riversley Farm and have sheep over there. And Marcus went over and foraged the ingredients for the dinner, and it was really cool to see something so traditional that in our culture is so foreign to us, but was really a beautiful thing to smoke. We smoked local cusk that was caught right off the coast with the sheep dung.
And shifting just a little bit, I know you do a lot of local sourcing, and we've heard a lot about you using oysters from Great Bay and so mm-hmm. forth. Can you talk a little bit about the sustainable practices you use and why you do that?
Yeah, we do. We try to focus as aggressively as we can on the local community for a number of reasons. First and foremost, I'm just very excited and passionate about what grows here, what lives here, what people are raising here, what people are growing here, what people are making for cheeses here, and things like that. And to me, that's something that really, really excites me. I think that it's a sustainable practice for the community as a whole, because every time we're buying something from one of our neighbors, we're keeping the money in our own community as well, instead of sending it to somewhere where we may not be able to actually know where that money's going. So it's nice to keep that economic circle of community going. And also it really keeps us in tune with our area, with our region, with the product that's here. This morning, for instance, we have our own garden, the Moxie Garden. It's at New Roots Farm in Newmarket. And, three of us were over there this morning, planting, what do we plant today? Beans, three different types of beans, edamame, herbs, kale. I feel like we planted something else today and I can't remember. But so we're planting these things, we're harvesting them, we're bringing them back to the restaurant. And the more in tune and in touch you are with the things, the more you understand them, the more you appreciate them, the more you can ideally communicate that to the guests when they come in at how special this may be. It didn't just come off a shelf.
In New England, where we obviously had some very cold months,
yeah.
If you had to live off the land and local sea year-round, could you do it, and how would you do it?
Yeah, you definitely can, and you know, sometimes when we're challenged for our local sourcing ethos in the winter, I always think, well, people lived here hundreds of years ago, and they survived. So if they did it, we have to be able to find a way. Now, we have modern conveniences, whether it be refrigeration, freezing, grocery stores, all these things, you know, but when we really, really try to push ourselves creatively on the menu, I actually look further back than look ahead and say, well, what were they doing 200 years ago because people lived here and they survived. So what were they eating? They were using root vegetables properly. They were understanding how to store some of the harvest in the fall to get through the winter. They were using many different preservation methods, whether it be cooking things down to preserves with heavy sugar, salt, acid, or smoking or drying or curing. These are all practices that have been done for hundreds of years that in today's culinary world, they're kind of looked at as a novelty, but they were actually born out of necessity to get through those months. And for us, those things are what really excite us, is how would we get through the winter? How would we survive the winter if we couldn't just order whatever we wanted to on our computer or our iPhone and put it in the freezer and be okay? So we definitely look at those types of things.
I wanted to ask you too about, you've won lots of awards and you're always very gracious. The James Beard Awards come up 3 years in a row. We've been a semifinalist. And, you know, having moved on beyond that, are you competitive? Does it bug you at all? I know you're always very gracious, give credit to everybody else in the community, mm-hmm. but do you really want to win that thing? Be honest.
Well, I'll be honest. I'm a competitive person by nature. I think in some ways in the restaurant business, you have to have a little bit of that or it's going to be tough because it's a very competitive business. Now, with that said, we have such a tight-knit community that others that would be looked at as my competition or me as their competition, we're not competing. We're friends. We're collaborating. We're working together. Last week, me and Evan Mallett of the Black Trumper were doing an interview together, and the reporter was saying, "So you two get along? You're friends?" And we're like, "Yes, we support each other. We want each other to succeed, because the more one of us succeeds," and that's not just Evan Mallett, it's the community as a whole, "the more all of us succeed individually, the more we succeed together." And, you know, so I am a competitive person, but and I'll be honest, for a good portion of my career, the James Beard was something that I definitely was fixated on, and I was really enamored to try to go down that path. I think as I've gotten a little older and gone through it, I hold it maybe in higher regard than I ever have, but I also know that every name that gets put into that hat and others that don't get put into that hat are more than deserving. So to try to make it a life's mission to win it or even be nominated for that matter, you're really setting yourself up for a tough road, because you can't control it. There's no defense in that game. There's no training. You know, I know many, many great chefs that have been nominated. Justin Walker from Earth in Kennebunkport, for instance. Chris Gould of Central Provisions in Portland, Maine. These are phenomenal chefs that, you know, I was fortunate enough that my name has made it on that list. Those two gentlemen I just mentioned, plus many, many others, could be there as well. So it's definitely something that I think I've become more wholesome about, knowing how special it is and how lucky you are if you do end up in those conversations, and to not take those moments for granted, because they may not come again.
We mentioned already you do a lot of charitable work, and the interview you just mentioned, I know, is about the upcoming Chuck and Chuck event that's to benefit En Belay, mm-hmm. the local organization that helps families with kids dealing with cancer. And you host a lot of events. You must get a lot of requests. A lot of things come your way. How do you choose what to get involved with?
We do. It's tough. I don't think I'm alone with other restaurant folks and like-minded people that we want to be able to contribute to everything. We want to be able to be involved in everything. Time and money doesn't allow that. So you do have to make decisions, which is tough, because sometimes you do have to say no. I don't have a formula for it, a rhyme or reason. Taste of the Nation, Share Our Strength, is one that I would say is always right at the top for me. That one's pretty much always a yes. Evan Mallett created the Heirloom Harvest Project, which does the barn dinner and the barbecue, and those ones are always kind of a definite yes. And then from there, a lot of it is based off of maybe timing. You know, do we have other events around that time? Do we have an opening? As well as, how do these events hit home to us personally and our community? We're very, very involved in Portsmouth Pride Day, and that was something that was very important to our general manager, Owen Wolfertz, and he brought that to me and said, this is very important to me. This is something that I want us to back. And I could see that he was very passionate about it. So the last few years and this year, we've been very involved in that, and it's fantastic. And when we were approached about the Shuck and Chuck for On Belay, the timing worked out. And then learning about this program, which I didn't know about this program before this, it really was an opportunity that I saw to help maybe get the word out a little bit about this program, because I didn't know about it. And this is, these people are doing, they're doing God's work of helping children of families that are dealing with such a challenging point in their lives. And I had never even thought about that. I'd never thought, like, what about the kids? What happens to them? And it was like, I don't care what the timing is. I'm going to be involved in this. We're going to help with this, not only that event, but again, for me, it was maybe an opportunity to help spread the word of this remarkable undertaking that they've embarked on.
Well, thank you very much for your time, Matt. We appreciate you coming in.
Thank you so much for having me.